So those are all good options. Okay, so then the next thing you're gonna do after you've selected a name and you've created and you've selected a registered agent is you're going to describe the purpose of the corporation. And what you'll do that through is what's called the Articles of Incorporation. Those are the documents you'll file with the Secretary of State, which basically define how your corporation is gonna run. So they're real simple. I mean, they're, you know, you can find them online. I mean, they're not very complicated. They're just a pretty simple form. You'll doubt there's a form that Secretary of State have, and you'll fill that out. You know, I went and pulled out SIOR's Articles of Incorporation from 1941. You know, and SIOR has seven things, you know, when they organized. So it was things like to unite realtors engaged in buying, selling, renting, or leasing others for the compensation of lands, buildings, and other facilities used in the process of industry and manufacturing, the fostering of knowledge, education, and integrity, and quality workmanship in the field of industrial real estate. And it goes on from there. But the reason that, the purpose is important, though, and you're gonna find, and we're gonna talk about that in the next part about the 501c6 status, because you have to have an appropriate purpose to get tax-exempt status from the IRS. So that, so the purpose is an important thing, and you know the SIOR one is perfect. I mean, this is the kind of you want to just basically say, you know, you're operating as a trade association to further, you know, the integrity of the industry, and in, you know, your model bylaws, which I think Diana was going to hand out. If you actually look in Article 2, the objectives, those are very similar to the kind of purposes you would want to put into the Articles of Incorporation. So that's an important part. Like I said, you're going to need to pay attention to that because that sets up the next step of getting tax exempt status. Let's see. So then you've got your Articles of Incorporation ready. Then the final thing you're going to need to do for your initial filing will be to select directors. That can vary by state law. You know, it's at least two, you know, a president and a treasurer. Some states, you know, Illinois requires three. So you'll want to designate, you know, who the officers and directors of the corporation will be. You also, in the Articles of Incorporation, might want to list any special requirements. So, like, for your chapters, I mean, obviously everybody is going to be a member of SIOR and also a realtor, too. So those would be just things you might want to put in the Articles of Incorporation, since those will be sort of special qualifications for your chapters. So after you file your incorporation documents, the next thing you need to do is create bylaws. Bylaws are essentially the rules for how the corporation operates. Now, I think, you know, Diana, like we talked about, so I think she handed out the SIOR model bylaws. How many of you have adopted the SIOR model bylaws? A few? Okay. So bylaws are important. Like I said, they're the rules. So like they establish, you know, when you're gonna have a meeting, you know, how you conduct meetings, how the meetings are noticed, you know, how the assets of the corporation will be distributed. And we'll go through the SIOR ones really quickly just to sort of highlight the things that are in there. If the bylaws are silent on an issue, then what the next step is to look at the state's Not-for-Profit Corporation Act. The statute is the default rule. So if there are no bylaws or if the bylaws are not complete, then the statute actually acts will fill in places. So like last night, somebody asked me, you know, SIOR is actually an Illinois not-for-profit corporation, and they asked me if SIOR could have meetings, you know, with votes, meetings where they had votes electronically. And in Illinois, yes, you can do that. Illinois allows people to conduct votes by email. So that's something like, you know, that's not actually in SIOR's documents, but I know the Not-for-Profit Corporation Act provides that. That could vary by state law, so that's one reason you need to be familiar with your state law. But so those are the kind of things, you know, those are the kind of nuances that you'll need to, you know. So if your bylaws are silent on an issue, the next step is always to look at the state law to see if it's addressed in there, because that will be what you'll need to do. So next, let's just take a quick look at the SIOR model chapter bylaws, which I think SIOR is looking at maybe revising these a little bit, but I'm sure they're probably not going to change a whole lot. So, you know, the first article just, you know, sets up the name and the purpose of the of the chapter. And the second is the objectives, like we discussed. You know, that actually could be used as your purpose in your articles of incorporation. You know, that sort of sets forth the goal of the chapter. Article 3 is the liquidation and distribution of the assets of the chapter. And that's important. That's actually required by the IRS. If you're going to obtain 501c6 status, no assets of the corporation can be distributed to a member. So it has to all be redistributed, so that no member can personally benefit by this not-for-profit corporation. So this language is pretty standard. It's, like I said, it's required by the IRS. So Article 4 here, you know, sets forth the member classifications and how someone becomes a member. It's obviously important for your chapter functions. Article 5 is everybody's favorite, the dues. Article 6, you know, addresses elections. Article 7 addresses the regulations of discipline. I will say, I was looking at this last night, the part in here about how members will waive all their claims against the associations, I have to say I'm not sure that, definitely in California that would not hold up, but it's a nice try, but it's something, but yeah, I wish we could get all our members not to agree not to sue our associations. It would make, probably wouldn't have a job if that was true, but anyway, I would not rely on this section to protect your thinking that no member will sue the chapter because this is very likely unenforceable. Article 8 then sets forth the committee structure for the chapter, which is another important thing you need to have. Article 9 sets forth the voting requirements. Article 10 sets forth the physical and elective years. Diana, do you guys, are all the chapters coordinated on these when they have their elections and their physical years? Do you know?
For the most part,
most chapters. Okay. That's important, actually, because that actually can trigger when your taxes need to be filed with the IRS. So that's something that you might want to think about. Talks about where the headquarters of the chapter will be. So these are the rules, and like I said, and if something's not addressed in these bylaws, then the next step is you look at the state's Not-for-Profit Corporation Act, and it fills in anything that isn't addressed in here. Okay, so after you've filed your incorporation documents, you've become incorporated, you've got your bylaws, you've got your everything, you've got your directors elected, you're having your annual meetings. After that, then the main things you need to do under state law is you need to file what's called an annual report. Basically, you receive that every year from the Secretary of State. All you need to really do is just list the officers and directors for each year in there and pay a small fee. I mean, I think it's like $10 or $15. So that's something that's important. You need to keep on top of, because if you let that lapse, you could eventually have your corporate status revoked. Like I said, the form's real simple, but this is a good example of, making sure your registered agent is someone who, when they receive this form, knows what to do with it. So it's something, like I said, like we had in our Washington office, apparently nobody knew what to do with this form. So our status lapsed in Washington, D.C. So, the way you can check to, once you're incorporated, like I said before, you can always go onto the Secretary of State's website, and you can type in the name of your corporation. It'll tell you, the status of the corporation. It'll tell you whether you're in good standing, whether all your documents are up to date. So if any of you aren't sure whether you've ever incorporated, or if your corporation status is still good, you can just go to the Secretary of State's office and check. If it has lapsed, you have a couple different options. One option would be you would just need to file all the annual reports and pay the fees for those years that you missed. So if it's like a couple of years, it's no big deal. You just file those annual reports, pay the fee. There might be a small late fee, but if it's been like 10 years, another option you can have is just to start over. You could just reincorporate, just file the documents again, and just start from scratch. That's another option that might be easier than having to go back and file 10 years worth of annual reports. Okay. Oh, another thing. Yeah, so I don't know. Do any of you guys have foundations or charitable arms of your chapters? Is that something you guys do? No? You do? Okay. Well, another part, thing that's important about that is, you know, in a lot of states and even some municipalities, you need a license to solicit contributions. So if you're doing the soliciting directly, you know, be aware that, you know, you do need to get this license. It's again, pretty easy. Usually that's through the state attorney general's office, but it is some paperwork. You know, a way you could still have these foundations, but, you know, what we do a lot, or what are some of our, the realtor estate associations do, is because NAR has registered its foundation everywhere, is so, like, if they have, like, a flood, like, we had those floods in North Dakota last year. So what we did was the North Dakota Association used the NAR foundation to do the solicitations, because that foundation's already licensed, you know, has a license to make those solicitations all across the country. So, you know, that's a way, you could still have your SIOR chapter foundation, but you can maybe work with your realtor association or somebody, you know, else who actually could do the soliciting, since they're already licensed, so you don't have to do the paperwork. It's just an idea, but, you know, that's one way we've done that, or we've helped our state associations that, you know, aren't able to, because they don't, you know, doing this all across the country is a pain. You have to file, I think there's 40 states you have to register in, so, you know, it's a lot of paperwork. So, you know, those are, that's an idea, but be aware, if you are soliciting money, you generally need to have a license to do that, and even some towns even require, like, you know, different, some cities require it as well. So another thing, you know, you might want to talk to a lawyer about before you start doing that. Yes?
How much of the income received by a chapter has to be, or how much of it can be carried over to the next year? How much of that income do you have to spend?
So the question is, the question is how much of the income needs to be spent in a year. I don't think there's any requirements about that. That's a little beyond the accounting side. I'm not 100% familiar with, but I don't think there's no requirement under state incorporation law for that. There may be some, the IRS could have some rules about that, but I've never seen anything, any requirements like that.
Accumulate,
yep.
More and more sponsorships.
Oh, yeah.
Larger.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any, but I mean, I know some of our state associations, they've been doing these, like, assessments for political purposes, and I mean, it's shocking how much money some of these funds, I mean, they're millions of dollars in some of these funds, you know, so I don't think there's any, and they've been collecting it as dues, so I don't think there's any requirements on that.
Excuse me, Diana, do you want people to use the microphone when asking?
Yes.
If anybody has a question, please step up the microphone, because this is being recorded.
Okay. Yep. Let's see. Did I get everything? Oh, yeah. You got a question? Okay.
We have quite a bit of cash.
Okay.
In our chapter. And we have not filed. We're not incorporated, and we haven't filed taxes. No. So we start the history report. This is great.
Yeah. Say your name.
So we start this process. What's our concern about going to previous years?
Well, you know, we were talking about this last night. I mean, you know, I don't know how much money you have, but it's probably still relatively, you know, it's like, how much do you have over, how much revenue do you have in a tax year about? Just an estimate. Do you have over 50,000?
Turn the microphone off. 100.
About 100,000, okay. So, yeah. So you'd be above the lowest, you know, the tax filing, but that's still relatively, that's not, you know, that's not something the IRS is going to be like, oh my God, you know, where do these guys come from? So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it is tricky. I mean, you know, if you file a tax return, they could come after you, but, you know, I mean, that could happen now too. I mean, they could, you know, it's better to get ahead of it than, you know, wait for them to come knocking. I don't know if you incorporated. I mean, you certainly should do that. I mean, that's a very, you know, especially because you have assets to protect. So, I mean, that's not going to trigger any of these other issues that you're concerned about. But, you know, I don't think it's unlikely that unless they had a reason to audit you, that they're going to do that independently, just because, you know, it's not, I mean, that's still pretty far down on the list of, you know, people that they're going to go after. So, I wouldn't let that be a reason not to do the